Welcome back to the Unschool Files podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and you're listening to episode 32. Y'all, this one is a gem. I shared space with Akilah Richards for a while, and we recorded a conversation that felt, oh, so good. We cover the vastness of intimacy, school transcending school, and boundaries, whitewashed freedom, communities, and consent, and what it means to be an agent of school, or an agent of your child. My mic, aka my iPhone, was a little echoey a few times, and I did think about adjusting the sound, re-recording, blah, blah, blah. But I decided that the real essence of this talk could not be broken and repaired with a cleaner, more crisp sound. Because you can really feel this conversation all the way through, including a little bump of my own fumbling over my own words. Also, there's a super special treat at the end of the conversation. You're definitely going to want to listen to the end. So join me in welcoming Akilah back to the podcast. Welcome back, Akilah. I am so honored to have you. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, this is fun. It was fun last time. It's been fun already. I'm here for it.
Good. As I told you in my email prior to us recording, I had a bunch of questions lined out. I checked in with the community and was like, what do you guys want to hear from Akilah? And had all this thought out stuff. And then I just thought, you know what? I'm going to pick five words or concepts, and we're just going to vibe on those five things.
Yes.
Cool. I'm glad that works for you.
Yes, absolutely. I just want to hold a vibe, as I said. That's it feels like such the time, such the energy, such the space for us to just feel into things, you know, just be still and feel into things. So I'm looking forward to just like doing that together and sharing that space out loud.
Absolutely. Me too. Okay, let's jump right in. The first concept is deschooling all our relationships.
Yeah.
What brings that, like what comes up for you in that concept?
Mm-hmm. So I like that we're talking about, you know, vocabulario, because I'm learning Spanish. Because one of the things that's really interesting to me lately with words is the limitations of them, and also how they're great invitations. You know, they're both. I feel like much of my life up until pretty recently, like maybe the past maybe couple of years, literally the past 2 years, words have been so important. You know, I write because I need to write. I'm a talker and I'm a sayer, and I'm good at putting things together in words that reach. So words have been good, but lately, the past couple of years, they feel incomplete. They feel like a limitation, that I'm really experiencing the limitations in words, from the use of words to even just knowing only a couple of languages, to the reliance on words, to the idea that people who are good with words are something-er, smarter, better, something-er, you know, the school currency of words. And so deschooling feels like it's connected to that, to recognize the ways that language and communication for me are now moving outside of the words that I'm used to and the words that I'm good at, and more so into language, like body language and the language of breath, like what happens when somebody's like, you know, like how that speaks so much more than 28 words.
Yeah. You know, an interesting way I've invited that in practice in my life, and this is totally unrelated to unschooling, but it's not unrelated, because it's kind of putting a practice to what you're saying around having that limitation in text. And I've just opted to the people that are really close to me to just start voice noting them, because they catch more. They catch that breath.
Yes. And I think it's about intimacy. You know, like that is the other thing that deschooling feels like it's very much about, getting reacquainted or maybe acquainted with the vastness of intimacy, that intimacy isn't just sexy time, you know, like how the context of it that I, at least I tend to have it in, was about a particular thing. It was like physicality and closeness physically. And even sometimes through conversation, but I think intimacy is in all things at varying degrees, and to get reacquainted with it is a type of de-schooling. It is an expansion of language. It is about leaving a voice note because you want to convey something without having to rely on the text, you know, and knowing what works when for you, because sometimes text is what somebody can get to based on where they are. And, you know, just all of those, all of that is language. All of that is communication. All of that is de-schooling, which the definition that I intuited for that is shedding the programming and habits that resulted from other people's agency over your time, thoughts, your body, your actions, and then designing life, like practices and beliefs that align with your desire to be, you know, like to thrive. Yeah.
And that transcends school by so much, like by miles and miles and miles.
Totally. Because the thing is, school, unfortunately, transcends school too.
True.
It's not just there. That's what the schoolishness is about. Mm-hmm. It's the way that, bruh, no matter where you are, that shit is there. So like, don't act like it ain't.
Yeah, it's true. It really is. I love that you touched on intimacy, because I think when I think about de-schooling our relationships and how we like envision being in relationship, I'm constantly coming back to intimacy in platonic relationships and how our society shuns that. And our society says that that is too romantic, or that is on the edge of something that could be considered whatever. I don't know, instant whatever. And humans are scared of intimacy almost because of that conditioning, I think. We don't want to be vulnerable because that could be mistaken as something else.
Yes, and we don't even have the skills because we're not in a position to learn what intimacy can mean to us, because we will have the ways where one person's idea of connecting is not, it's too much for someone else. You know, I think about my daughters and the differences in their personalities, you know, how one will want you to come up and be like, hey, and, you know, connect. And the other is like, if I don't look over there, you know, and that both of those are, you know, part of how they hold things and need things. And if we were able to name things like that, then we could actually have some practice with it. Whereas now, as you said, like we're afraid. And then there's, you know, the validity of to some of the fears, like most fears. But again, a lot of that is because we're not living authentically. We're just like, well, you know, this is what happens here and don't cross this line here. And it's like, it's not, we're not set up like that as humans.
No. I feel like we're just, someone said this quote ages ago, I don't even recall who it was. I feel like it was someone spiritual that said, we spend most of our lives as humans walking around adjusting our costumes. So we're worried about adjusting our costumes. So we can't really live authentically when we're doing that.
Yeah. And again, it's like the practice is not about like knowing exactly what to do different. It's just being willing to explore these things together so that we can discover and so that we can de-school from the things that told us something else.
Yeah. I feel like that's the perfect segue into the next concept of confident autonomy.
Yeah.
You talked about one of your daughters being able to like stand in their own of like, I'm not into that. I don't subscribe to that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be, you know, bothered. How do you think that you got there? They got there.
Yeah. So the first thing to note is that that place is not a, it's not a destination. Maybe I shouldn't say that place because place implies destination, huh? So that being in that mindset or having that skill, that's what it is. Having that skill is not a destination. It doesn't feel like a there in that sense. It feels like a location, like you find that in that moment, you can embrace, for example, unbothered. And then in another moment, you don't, but then you have some skills for what to do with that. And that's what I think confident autonomy embodies. Like, that's how I understand it, that it isn't about this absolute of like, oh, when this shows up, I'm like this, boom, that's it, I got it. It allows for the variation of our emotional spectrum and needs and capacities, but not from a space where we don't know how not to be harmful to other people and to ourselves, mainly by just being able to name and hold boundaries. So I would say, in terms of a how, the skill of practicing allowing at first a child to assert their boundaries, mm-hmm. and then learning how we get in the way of that, sometimes unknowingly, and also, you know, like being an adult who actually practices having your own boundaries as well. I think that's how we end up, you know, like locating that skill in our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I think that looks like in practice. And do you know what I mean? Like, does it feel clear, like, why I would distinguish?
It does. And I think I was looking for something there in distinguishing what confident autonomy means, because I do think that it can be interpreted as this ability or a skill that you acquire that is universally applied in like what your stance is on something. So I love that you made a distinguished difference between not having a stance on all things, but knowing when and where, and understanding nuance, and like when, yes. when asserting yourself may be harmful to, you know, someone else in that type of way, because you're learning people and how they receive, you know, messages and those types of things.
Yes.
And it's not the same when you just assert yourself to assert yourself, and
right.
That's just being an asshole.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's like, I really appreciated hearing you, say that out loud. You know, there it is again, how words can be invitations, because it is important for me to recognize or to learn about some of the ways that these concepts can show up and the other ways that they could be understood. And I completely need that. You know, that's useful as I'm in spaces where I get to just like share how that shows up for other people. It also reminds me a lot of a lot of other isms that we deal with, where, for example, when I first started recognizing what we were doing as unschooling, you know, and realized that for a lot of people, a part of the issue with it, it felt like, it's like, well, if somebody's free, they're just going to do like whatever they want, and then they're going to harm other people. Mm-hmm. And that was happening, especially in the like whitewashed idea mm-hmm. of what it means to be free. So it's good to be able to talk about the like what things mean, like shared meaning around things like confident autonomy and freedom, because freedom could not mean that other people were being harmed by your sovereignty. Then that's not what that is. So it's good to be able to say, what do I mean by this? And what are some of the things that show up about it that I can then really clarify, so that we know what we're talking about. And we're also giving meaning, not just like ascribing to a definition, but giving meaning to these practices, because that's what these things are. They're not just vocabulary. I consider these like parts of my unschooling practice, naming confident autonomy, understanding what boundary work means in our house and trust work means, and, you know, like what our deschooling processes take us through and where we find ourselves. Like, these are our practices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do think it's important to name it and to talk about it and to share the ways that it is being interpreted.
Yeah.
Those things could be very harmful.
Yep.
Especially when you take that into a community where other people are also interpreting it that way.
Yep.
And it slowly starts to look like, I don't know, very fashy looking pod.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So Aisha was talking about that recently on my podcast, Fear of the Free Child. We were talking Aisha was saying she was in this unschooling space, and it's like, so like, this is how we unschool. It looks exactly like this. This is the definition of unschooling, because it don't feel like that for me. You know, like, we're not just going to walk around with this one like flag of a definition and not really work with that shit. Like, that's not togethering. That's not the anything. Yeah. That's more of the same.
And if you read it out of a book and it worked in a community in, you know, I don't know, Massachusetts or North Dakota or whatever, it doesn't mean it's going to work in yours. You have to look at people where you are.
Yes. And that's what so much of it is. Yeah. And that's a big part of why I'm saying that these things are skill sets. And because that ability to recognize that nothing that we're doing in the name of liberation and decolonization and deschooling, which are terms that I absolutely associate with unschooling, it cannot happen without being informed by the people that we want it for and with. Period.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah.
The next concept is actually community building.
So. Boom, all the segues. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, that's what that means to me. I feel, Megan, like people, we toss the word community around. Yeah, right? Like, yes, there it is again with the breath language completely. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a good word to have in our arsenal if we can just manage to, again, be sure to share meaning about that shit with each of the communities. Like, it can't just be my definition of community and I bring that everywhere I go and just that. It's, yes, I have a definition of community and I bring it everywhere I go. And when I go to these places, that definition evolves into like our actual practice, because it is then informed appropriately by the other people that I want to be doing this with. So, and anything else is not, I don't see how other things can be consensual. You know what I mean? And if consent isn't there, then why are we saying community?
Right. If it is rooted in, you know, one or two people's idea of how to force that thing, that's power.
Exactly. And it's power over. It's misuse of power, because power. Right. Like, and I my mind went to thinking about, for example, incarcerated people and how community can be formed in those spaces, because even though they're in a space where, you know, they're being held, there is still the consent for whatever it is that they are deciding to be part of in there, like the communities that form inside of that space, because that's a place, that's an institution, but there are people in there. And wherever people are, we have the opportunity to commune. And we also have the default, unfortunately, I think, of the colonized way, where we just like decide for people and try to like petition and campaign for more people to do our thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's speak to that a little bit. I was just sharing with some people recently about listenership on this podcast, and someone asked me to kind of describe who they thought was listening. And based on feedback, there are a lot of marginalized folks who listen in here, but there are also a lot of very curious white folks who listen here. Mm. And so when I stumble upon a phrase that I feel like some people may be struggling to conceptualize or understand or hear from the right person, I want to expand on it a little more. And I know that there are a lot of folks, a lot of white folks, who struggle with hearing the word colonizer or the colonized mindset or anything related to that, which first I feel like is their role to unpack why they're uncomfortable first. But when they're ready to listen and come to this space and hear what that means, let's expand on what that means for folks.
Mm.
I know. I totally fumbled around with what I was trying to ask. If you just hang tight for a couple minutes, we really talk through this and get to the root of what I think I'm really trying to ask. I'm just so sorry that it was in this way. I thought about deleting it, but then I thought, nope, there's way too much value and representation of so many experiences in this really awkward question that I framed. But I promise it gets better.
What does it mean to you? Because when I ask that, because I'm not even, because it's so maybe obvious to me is the word. And I don't say that in a like, why don't you get it? Because I get it way.
Yes.
I say it in a, because I understand it to be such a significant part of what we're, you know, trying to unlearn together.
Right.
I am not always sure on what, I don't even think I'm the right person to ask that to. I'm the person for someone who's in it and wants to talk in it. It might be better if you say to people who listen to it, how you see it. And then maybe I can riff off of that. Cause I'm like, I don't know, look around.
Ultimately for me, where it is just in power over, and this idea that you can control things the way you want them to be. And it usually lands in parenting, because those are smaller humans that you can have power over, and you probably had power over you. But I think many of them have a really difficult time distinguishing what might be wrongful use of power and what are, they feel like, nostalgic tradition, maybe, or like things that they're like, and it's not the real obvious ones either, Akila, like spanking. It's the more challenging ones, like still forcing your child to wear a certain thing so that you're not looked at a certain way.
Yeah. And I know that those are things that go across, like, you know, we have like Muslim unschooling families who wrestle with, you know, those sort of things as well. We have, you know, or people who are parts of like super, super traditional elements of their culture that feel like those are not even on the table to, you know, to discuss. And so I think the word consent, as we've talked about before, remains an important part of perhaps the explanation that we, as if we are interested in raising free people, and that definition goes beyond, as we talked about before, them just being free to do whatever they want, that the freedom comes with a sense of responsibility that, for being a part of something, and that you impact things. Right? So that if you are thinking about consent as a significant or perhaps a core concept of one's capacity to raise free people, then that would be a good starting point, because so much of colonization is about the ignoring of the right of consent and the removal of that. So if you start there and you say, well, okay, are there things that my children need my consent for? Yes, that's usually an easy question. What are those things? And then really, as you're continuing your walk, as you're, you know, listening to podcasts like ours and being in community with people and being in relationship with your kid, you can start to look at the questions. That's, I'm going to go back to my question asking about, so when they push back against this thing, or when I said they needed to go to bed by 9, because of course they're kids and they wouldn't know any better, so in that case I do not require their consent, why isn't that okay? Like, is this a thing? Are people saying this is a thing? Does my kid actually want to stay up till too late? Then what happens if they, you know, just like let those things happen? And I really just say that because that's my personal experience, you know, and that's really what I try to speak mostly to, my personal experience. And in my experience, a lot of the things that I did not even question, as you talked about, Megan, the ones that are like subtle as shit, you're like, what, how is that even a thing? Like bedtime, that I was like, what? Of course they got to go to bed. What the hell? You know, I just tied those things together. Like, if I didn't say they would go to bed, that they would never actually go to bed. Right. Yeah. So even just unraveling that became an opening for, well, shit, how many other things am I doing that with, where I'm just like, well, if I don't do this, if I don't make this happen, then it won't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of these communities of very curious folks who are wanting to investigate these ideas further and maybe dip their toes into this work because it's been in their face for so long that they cannot ignore it anymore. Mm-hmm. I think some of them in community with one another don't, there's nothing that ever comes into their community that says those things are harmful. And so I guess maybe I'm imagining, I live in a very liberal city where you might see a pack of unschooled kids at several different parks at any given time, you know, and they're predominantly white. And I don't know that a lot of pushback comes in those communities as far as someone saying, hey, that feels harmful to me, when everyone is sort of in that pursuit of individual and protecting each other's bubbles of individual freedom.
Yeah.
And like creating a safe space for that. I guess that's what I meant when I was talking about those groups sort of looking like that, kind of starting to look like a little fashy pod, because it, you are just like it's just these little individuals.
Yeah. I don't know. I go back, Megan, to the, to being really clear about like how I feel like I can serve, you know, like how I can be in community with other folks who are unschooling and deschooling. And I really, I don't, if someone isn't in a space where they're seeing that what's happening is harmful, again, I just don't see myself as the space. I don't really have anything to engage that. I tend to be where we know that things are happening and we're maybe just unclear about what to do, or we've been trying things and seeing little bits that are effective, but a lot of other shit that's still problematic. Like, you know, like that's really where.
Yeah.
Cause if you're just what, everybody's fine. I'm like,
feel that. And I'm also not hanging out in those spaces. I think what I'm observing from someone who hears a lot from different people all over the world, but a lot of folks here in the United States who are unschooling about community and community building, is they're either the lone person in that group going, no one here sees how harmful it is. I don't have anywhere to go. And if I leave here, I'll have no one. And then other people who have left those groups and went, I don't want any part of that. I can't do that. I'm off to find something that feels safer, better, you know, all these things that I'm looking for. And then they're in isolation.
Yeah.
I guess there's something there that feels missing. I don't know what it is. Maybe I even framed the original question wrong. I don't quite know what I'm exploring.
I don't think it could be wrong, because I think this is what we're doing, exploring those pieces. And if these are, you know, if these are experiences, which they are, that people around you are having or people in your circle are connected to, then that's all we're doing, is exploring that. And I feel like right now, one of the ways that when my family was experiencing a lot of that, being like, okay, so no one else, literally no one else is doing this shit. You know, like we really, really felt like that. And our experiences reflected that. And this was back in like, you know, 2011, 2012, we started to reframe even community, or I did, I'll speak for myself. So did the girls, really, Marley and Sage, to really look at other ways of learning to be in community, which could take away the physicality, you know, if they're not in the state that you're in, or country, or even now with the pandemic, makes it so much harder in a lot of ways. We really needed, a part of it was to expand how. So like if we stormed out of a place, if I didn't go back to a mom group because they were all just like, it just was not the space for me, I didn't then shut down the idea of mom groups in life. I could find some virtual ones. And even though it's not the same, especially when my kids are little, right? And we need to be out in a different way. And I'm a part of getting them out into spaces, unlike now at, you know, 16 and 18 almost, it's different. Really just the expansion of how I communed was a part of it, that I didn't just rely on geography. And I also didn't rely on same. Like I didn't need to be in a space, like I did not, my kids and I did not need to bring the battle of why everyone there should not yell at their kids, if we could also be in a community where no one was gonna yell at each other's kids. Could that be enough for that time that we were at that park? And then my kids and I would have a conversation about the kid that got yelled at, because we're not trying to shelter them from the world. We're giving skills for being in the world. You
Yes.
know, so those sort of reframings are what were, you know, what was helpful for us.
Yeah, I feel like this is bringing up the concept you talked a lot about of emergent structures, and that
Yes.
entire good enough for now, safe enough to try bit.
Yes, the sociocratic model. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like that is definitely something to embrace. And then I'm also feeling like I'm pulling from some memories of seeing some people share things out on the socials around like unschoolers, maybe don't necessarily just have to find unschoolers. Maybe
Yes.
you're in community with the farmer down the street, and maybe you're also in community with the lady that, you know, sits outside of the library.
Exactly. Come on, man. We can't. It's a term, bro. Like, it's a term. And it's not to take value away from the term, because I don't feel like unschooling, I don't have that issue of it being the wrong term or the right term at all. At all. I think it's powerful. It was certainly powerful for a lot of us, the in unschooling, to say, yes, I am moving away from this thing, is a deliberate act to move away from schoolishness. And then to get to a stage in the journey where it's like, I don't even know what the hell this is called. And I love when people say that. It's like, I actually don't think I'm an unschooler. I'm a this. Yes, make up your own term, because all it means is that you're moving away from a thing that was assigned to you. You're moving away from a situation over into that emergent structure that you're deliberately a part of designing that and being in communities where that's happening. And so it could not be, if you were deliberately designing a life that was really a good fit for you and yours, that it would have to be with other people who basically have the same name as you, you know what I mean? Who identify with the same four things as you, or were born in your birth month. Like, it's
yeah.
as random as that. So yes, the farmer, the other people who are living are rich sources of connection and education. And sometimes the education is, yay, oh my God, my people. And sometimes the education is, look at how people can be imperfect, how they can be so awesome with this farm and this sustainable life, and also a complete asshole about these three things, because that's real shit. So,
yes.
you know, let's not try to put people in pedestals and boxes so that we can be perfect patty unschoolers together. Like, that's
yes.
foolishness. Yeah.
Yes. I love that you were talking about this integration of ideas and an integration of humanness, in that we don't need to just label people in and put them in a box, even when they are, you know, sometimes in a box that it has a really harmful label, and you're just like, man, I just really wish you weren't that.
Exactly. Exactly. It's
we can't
a limitation.
Erase them.
Yes.
It's
so
impossible.
And that is an example of colonization, going back to the
yes.
idea of how the concept of colonization, the practice, that way, is in so many things, not just back in ye old times when whatever the hell. That's how it happens now, because we form colonies because we are taught that, we are groomed that in schoolish ways. The classroom is a colony. The A students are their own colonies. The teachers are a colonies. The star teachers that teach the gifted students are a colony. Right.
Yes.
So like we are groomed inside of them. And the point is to come out of that.
Yes.
So it means then that we have to accept complexity and nuance, and that someone isn't just valid because we understand what they are.
Yes.
That's a schoolish thing. It's how are they being? How are we being together? What happens when they do, perhaps inevitably at first, do some harmful shit? How are they responding to that? What are we doing, this group of us, in response to that? Those are the things that we can learn from, not trying to find the people who are 32% off grid, unschooling,
yes.
deschooling for 19 months, you know, like, please.
Oh my gosh, yes, you are saying so many truths here that I'm just like, I can't stop smiling. It's so, so good. There are so many things I probably already forgot all of my thoughts. Yes, so much there. Since Bell Hooks just passed, I'm obviously thinking about her and her concept of mutuality and integrating with other humans, with the masculine and the feminine, with not trying to consistently use that colonization tool of erasure and wanting to remove what is other and what doesn't feel comfortable or right to us.
Yeah.
Or the notion of needing to understand it for it to exist, because I don't have to understand bigots, and they are very much alive.
Yes, like so many, many things. And what is the understanding to even question that? What does that even mean? You know, for somebody, even looking at it on the other side, like for someone to understand, to first understand us, for it to be okay for us to be, that's something that as a Black woman, I'm intimate with. You know, I'm very familiar with the idea that when I was pursuing law and law school, that my hair needed to be understandable to pervasive whiteness in order for me to even get into the room to do the interview, you know, or all of these things. We have to see where these things live so that we can look at how we participate in them, because it isn't just like out there. We live it in here too.
We really do. We really
Yeah.
do. And in community building, I can't help but want to touch a little bit on, you know, the elephant in the room that many people, most people, a critical mass of humans cannot divest from school as an institution, and don't have the ability to leave just yet. And we can still, as parents, those who may be listening and have kids that they can't remove from school for some reason, you can divest from schoolishness while being in systems. It probably is a lot harder. But I think
Yeah.
that there are ways to maneuver and ways to, dare I say, trailblaze your way out of a thing and just maybe say, I'm not doing that. I
Yeah,
offer my testimony.
definitely. Yes. And it could be something like literal and logistical like that. Like I'm not doing the test, I'm opting out of a thing.
Right.
And it can also, and perhaps needs to include the realization of schoolishness as a thing that does not just live in school.
Right.
So, and that's why that's so important to name it as such, because then you can look at all of the places where those things live. Again, like consent, that you can have the conversation to say school is required now because of our situation or my understanding or whatever the case is, but in it, your sovereignty as a child that I am in charge of legally and that I love in these ways, I want to partner with you on that. So that might look like perhaps how you spend your time outside of school, because you're not in school all the time. Even if you're in boarding school, you're at home sometimes, I think. And so, like, what is the relationship like between us at home?
Right.
How much am I an agent of school at home, and can I shift that? Can I be more an agent of my child and less an agent of school? That's a big question to ask oneself. And the answer is yes, I can. And then your part is to look at how. You know, first of all, not just automatically believing the teacher. First of all, or second of all, not all, not give it, making sure my child understands that when something happens between them and the school or in the classroom, that I am interested in what happened to them first and foremost, not what they did, what they caused, but what happened to them. Right?
Right.
Like things like that we can start to do so that we can, as adults who are super schoolish, begin to learn how to be more trustworthy to our children who are subject to school.
Yeah. I love that way that you described partnering with them, and being a place to hold their experience first. And not just whatever the adult around them's experience was first.
Right, exactly, because that's so what I'm used to. That's what, you know, so many of us know. And it's like to get something wrong or to be told that you did something wrong becomes the thing that you hide
Yeah.
simply because of the label of right or wrong. Whereas if you can build a trustworthiness, then you can increase the chances that your child is going to be able to share with you what's happening. So you can have a fuller view of what's happening and you can actually be part of their support system and not so much a part of the problem, because the teacher has even less power than you. They're stuck in that system in a certain way as well, you know?
Yeah, really. And that's I get really stuck on the conversation about the physicality of schools and that they're not going away right now. And I love the, you know, I love the idea of abolishing school and everything about the industrial school model. But that's not a reality that we live in right now. And so we try to hold that truth there, because otherwise you can start to sound like, you know, a real privileged neolib talking about like everything against schools. And, you know, most everybody you know outside of your unschooling circle is still very much subject to that.
Yeah, which is why, again, this idea of against schools just feels like it's like segmenting one element of such a big, vast thing, because not everyone who unschools is against school, and unschooling is certainly not about, in totality, what's up with school. It's about life beyond that. It's about school as, for some people, sometimes a potential resource and not, you know, God, self, or nature, or whatever you want to call it. It's that. It's it being central. It's it being the dangling carrot that is over so many, you know, as someone who moved here from another country whose parents moved before them, and we had very specific ideas of our role and the potential of, you know, all these things we can do. to be able to decenter that and to move into life is not really about the problem with school.
No.
You know, so like a part of our work as people who endeavor to guide conversations around things like unschooling, Megan, is that we can do this sort of thing. We can talk about decentralizing school even outside of the physical space. Like, this is not battle of whatever the fuck. It's towards a whole bunch of things. It's not just away from, it's toward.
Absolutely. And I like that. I like describing it as a toward. And I also think the reason why it's important to name and expand on, you know, the colonizer thought is because when I talk about being anti-school, when I hear you talk about it being anti-school or anything around being anti-school, it's anti-colonialism, it's anti-power over, it's anti-domination.
Yes.
It's anti those things, which is oftentimes, I mean, it is schoolishness, but school is conflated in the unschooling talk with just academia and books.
Yes, very true, very true. And then we turn around and do the same thing because we assume, because we're all unschoolers, that we've read the same books and that we should be reading these books and then all these other things. And so again, that's why the togethering is important, because when you're in community, then you can actually get to know those people. And for example, when bell hooks passed, there were so many assumptions about my relationship to bell hooks that were not rooted in anyone actually asking me anything about it. And I don't see that as a negative. I see it as one of the examples of the ways that we can really continue to learn what it means to be intimate, you know, to be in relationships where assumptions are questioned.
Yeah.
More than anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine assumptions for probably any person of color, specifically Black people, because you have a proximity just by sharing skin color.
Yep, absolutely. And I was saying to our friend Mercer yesterday about how bell hooks actually came into my life after I started writing for Everyday Feminism. Back in the day, this really dope website, Sandra Kim founded that space, because a lot of the things that came to me just through my struggles and intuitions and were a lot of the same things that bell hooks and Audre Lorde and Patricia, like all these other women folk were talking about, even mother work and a lot of these things. People would send me paragraphs that were just basically saying similar things, but I believe everything is everything. And that's even how I found out about that. I went to college. I went to a Black college. I just moved through a lot of those things. That my connection, as with most books, because I'm not a big reader. I'm a big writer, not a big reader. Most of it comes through someone who knows me to an extent, bringing an author's work to me, usually because something that I've done is connected to it. Adrian Marie Brown is another person where, you know, it's like so many connections, but I actually, that's how I know them and that's how they're special to me.
Yeah.
But so I love sharing that because it just kind of moves into like, there's so many different ways that people engage and there's so many things that we might assume. And it's interesting to learn about how those assumptions play out.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate hearing that story. I think that's really wonderful and I'm honored that you're sharing it here.
Thank you.
I think it's really cool to hear that you, first of all, Everything It's Everything is something that I have never been able to let go since the first time you said it to me. And another unschooling parent said it to me, and I was like, can I quote you on that? And she was like, oh, I don't know, it's been said by many people before. And I was like, oh, you're right.
Yes. Hill,
Akilah Richards, and now you.
And like 3/4 of the island of Jamaica, if not all, because that's where it came from. That's what we say. Everything is everything. It. Yeah.
I love it so much. And it really is. And I love that you shared how intuitively you were feeling and saying and writing the same things without even knowing it. I think that's incredible.
I think so too, Megan. Like it makes me just want to bawl my eyes out all the time. All the time, because I'm like, look at the ways that these energies, these requirements of us as part of nature show up in different beings. They show up in different ways. I imagine, you know, people like me being in their parts of the world at different times, having the same sort of meditation, having the same sort of cry. Like,
yeah.
It just makes me feel so beautifully insignificant, if that makes sense outside my head. yeah, like a good climb, you know, or a good dance, like it just makes you feel like nothing, for me, in the best way. Like I'm so a part of like everything ever. Oh my god, like
I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have two words left. I started with my phrases or concepts, and the last two are conflict and pleasure. Do you want to pick one?
Let's see if we can wrap them together, because I feel like this conversation is nice and full and rounding. Yeah. So conflict and pleasure, like sometimes those are not in opposition. Sometimes conflict is how you get to pleasure. You know, like sometimes conflict is the portal to pleasure. Boom.
That's okay. What it is.
Yeah. Sometimes conflict for me is certainly portal work for being at peace, being at ease, which is what pleasure is about for me. And also really beautifully, one of my sister in that's so present in my life right now, Thea Monnier, who also has a dope podcast called Shaping the Shift. Talks about pleasure and joy a lot. And one of the things that we connect on is the idea that in parenting, sometimes the ways that we get in the way of freedom and sovereignty and pleasure is because of our own resentment of pleasure, our own experiences as adults with pleasure. And I think that's a very interesting thread, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that you connected conflict and pleasure in that way. And the first thing I thought when you said that was, of all the times that we've been in some kind of family strife, where I'm like standing my ground, I'm activated as hell, I'm in my child mode of like being triggered and and definitely acting in that mode. And we're maybe not being our best selves. And sometimes a little bit of like guilt or shame will come up in that person is coming out of me, or that thing is coming out of me, that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps me to feel that come up, because then I measure it and I realize like, okay, I'm feeling something, I need to maybe slow it down a bit, but it usually is in a lot of conflict. And from that comes this like expanding deep breath. And when they finally hear you.
Yes.
Or you're finally, you know, able to hear them.
Yes, Megan. Exactly. Exactly.
It's like a release.
Yep. Yeah. And that conflict is sometimes, maybe all the time, worth examining, because sometimes maybe that's not even the right name for it, you know, right. Or maybe it is, but sometimes it's something else. It's like, I think about, a convulsion, you know, like I think about things shaking up, like an eruption, right? I think about that. I think about a card deck, as I've been using these card decks and moving the cards around so that they're all over the place. And then I can really feel and decide and let other energies beside me in.
Yeah.
All of those things come up as I'm really feeling through what we're talking about with conflict, and how conflict can also be such a powerful space to create space. Sometimes things need to do that so that you can go in and create space for the molecules to breathe, and then a different thing happens. You
Yeah.
know, like it's gonna be an invitation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, an invitation to sort of, and I think I'm doing the same with a lot of conflict in my life, is taking that, those sometimes not great feelings and alchemizing them into
Yep.
something that feels better.
Yes, and I love the term alchemizing for so many reasons, especially because a part of that in my brain is like just laying it out, you know, just
Yeah.
having everything there. Because alchemy, how I experience it, is not about me and what I can do. It is such an invitation to so much divinity and vast intelligence to come through for me. You know, or through me and with me and all of that, as opposed to just being on me, which is what unschooling is also such a relief from for me. I don't have to be all the things to my kids and blah, blah, blah. That's foolishness. It's
Yeah.
ecological. Yeah, it's alchemical. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I hear you moving around on those cards. You want to pull one?
Oh my gosh. I don't even, what was I feeling up over here? Yes, actually. Thanks for asking, Megan.
When I heard you pull the first one on your podcast, I was like, okay, I'm gonna ask.
I love this. I love it. I love it. So unexpected. Okay. All right. So these are the tin ones too, because I did summon this material, which feels good. So this card that came up, I just went over there to the stash and just pulled this one up. It's the design card. And these are from, if you read my book, Raising Free People, I talked about how unschooling is like this 4D practice for me. And design, the design card says, the design takes into account the how and what of unschooling, as in how it works in your home or school or co-op, and what work it is highlighting the need to do more of. So this feels very much like an
Perfect.
invitation. As we were just talking about, yeah, what came up for you as you heard that?
Well, I think I'm continuously being reminded to integrate with those who do not maybe necessarily think like me or believe the same things that I do. But I also don't need to prove what I'm doing with unschooling either. And
Yes.
so, yeah, I think that's what I'm thinking about.
And I love that. And that feels very much like design work, because the design is, it moves away from like the design of the curriculum and how my boards are set up at home, and more about like me, like the design of me and mine, and how are we showing up? You know, like how do I want to always feel like I need to prove something? Are my children then feeling like they need to prove something? Is that the direction that I'm designing into? Like all of these things.
I think I want to know how to. I think co-designing is what's coming up. Like those folks that I'm thinking about integrating with, how do I co-design with humans that I struggle with? And they're not always the kind of people that you can just dismiss. You know, there are definitely people who have things to say that you can just dismiss and it can roll off of you.
No, but not always, especially when
Not
you're being in the world with your child and they might have a connection to that person.
Right. You're getting it. Yes.
And we're not raising ourselves or our children in bubbles. Like this
No.
is not, we're not. And it's a powerful question. It feels like a powerful question to close with, because I feel like so many of us have that question, you know, and I would bring in a bit of seasoning to that and say, is there a way to discern between who I'm going to co-design with? You know, like who's going to be in the co-design process and who might not be? Like all my engagement might not be design work.
Right.
You know, and then so if not, then what are some of the other ways that I can engage and be with and allow for these relationships without feeling even that I do need to design? Even when it's like your partner, because there are ways that you can co-design, and then there's spaces where you can look at again, emergent structure. Because
Yeah.
being together don't mean you do everything together, don't mean you know, that's another
Right.
conversation. Chris and I talk a lot about that
Definitely.
too. Like we are ourselves together, like we didn't meld into one thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, we could probably do this for hours and go down that rabbit hole. But we'll
right, that's another topic for another episode. Yes, meet us back here.
Thank you so much for doing this with me. It's such a pleasure. And I just love that you're able to hold a space and let me ramble and ask awkward questions and fumble around while we find an answer.
You are so welcome, because I feel the same way. Thank you for letting me just like ramble for 15 minutes to be like, yeah, no, I just don't mess with that.
No, I think it's really good. I'm always thinking about who's listening, and I'm trying to touch on lots of different things while staying firmly in what I believe.
I feel you.
Respecting that for you too. So thank you.
Yes. And as a fellow podcaster, just know that I feel like you did a great job, because I totally know what it's like to want to, you know, cover the things, because you know who's listening. And I, you know, I recognize that that need. It's not, I wouldn't even call it a struggle, that responsibility, because we do care about that. And yeah, and we come at it from all our different ways. And as a podcaster, I'm like, I feel you.
I appreciate that. I think the folks in my DMs probably appreciate it too.
Oh, good. Yes. Much love to you. And I appreciated our conversation once again. Good stuff. And all that you're doing. Like, you know, we need each other.
Yes, we do. And everything that you're doing is incredible. All the work you're doing is incredible. As you know, I'm voice noting you all the time to tell you I'm jumping up and down.
Which I love. Thank you so much for even being a part of our Make It Happen family. That's like all the ways that you and I are in community. I really appreciate.
Yes, thank you. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Yes. Peace and love. You too.
Bye-bye. Kila, thank you so much for the time and words that you've shared with me. Every time we connect, I treasure the space and the conversation we share. I hope that we can do it in person one day. Your grace and patience is unlike anyone, and I just appreciate you beyond words. Everyone else, thanks for listening, folks. I am so glad to be here. I'm glad you're here. And I'd like to build community with you. If there's anything that you want to share that came up for you around this episode, please reach out to me. You can send me an email at theunschoolfiles@gmail.com. You can find me on the website, theunschoolfiles.com, or you can go over to Instagram and comment publicly or send me a direct message there. It is not the most active space over on Instagram because I refuse to battle algorithms, but I do encourage public conversation there. And if you're looking to connect further, you want more support in your unschooling, please find me and let's connect on Discord. The community is hosting a space there with so many different channels, and there is just a lot of compassion and support with some really incredible human beings. So I'd love to bring you into the space there as well. Reach out to me if you'd like to join. One last announcement. If you are a Minecrafter, if your young people are Minecrafters, if you are wanting to join other unschoolers, we are building a Java server. It is kind of in the test period right now. We have a handful of folks in there, but we'd love to welcome you. So reach out to me if you want an invitation. We'll whitelist you and you can Minecraft with us. Until next time, friends, stay kind to each other.